Hello, and thank you for joining me for Interview Points. My name is Aldous Tyler. Everybody wants to believe that we have an open and fair democracy, that everyone's voice is equal, that when I go to the ballot box, my vote counts the same as your vote, counts the same as your aunt's vote, counts the same as the guy who just washed your car's vote, etc. We want to make sure that everybody's voice is heard equally because we have the inherent belief that, hey, we're all equal. Well, as it turns out, sometimes there's real challenges to actually making sure that elections are open, fair, and honest, and that government also operates the same way. Now, across the country, there are various groups that are dedicated to making sure that, or at least trying to make sure that this kind of open, transparent, and fair governance and elections occur. But right here in Wisconsin, we have the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, which you can find at WISDC, that's wisdc.org. And actually joining us right now, we have Mike McCabe from the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. Mike, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, Aldous. Good to be with you.
All right. Well, and the reason I'm bringing you out here right now and asked you to join us is because, well, let's face it, we've had some interesting things happen locally and nationally when it comes to fair elections and, you know, does cash equal speech? And, well, I won't jump ahead of myself too much, but first of all, let's start off by mentioning that just late last year, we had a win. Now, if I remember right, you were referred to, I believe, as the Moses of fair elections. Was that it, right? About right?
Well, you know, we were in a tough situation with the economy, and one of the lobbyists who works for all the groups that opposed us on campaign finance reform told a reporter that if anybody could get public financing through the legislature in this economy, he'd call him Moses. And you know, sure enough, Wisconsin became the only state in the country to pass any kind of public financing legislation. We got the Impartial Justice Bill, which creates fully publicly financed elections for state Supreme Court through the legislature. We got it to the governor's desk, and the governor signed it. And it was easily the biggest breakthrough in campaign finance reform in Wisconsin in over 30 years. You have to go back to 1977 to see something of that magnitude that has happened here. And you know, I certainly can't claim to be the only Moses. If it took Moses to get this done, there were an awful lot of people working very hard for this. It was a 10-year-long battle. This legislation was first introduced in 1999, and we finally got it through both houses into the governor by 2009, by the end of 2009. So, you know, that was a very sweet win, no question about it. And Wisconsin not only was the only state to pass public financing legislation of any kind in 2009, but we became only the third state to ever do it for judicial elections, North Carolina and New Mexico being the other two. So, you know, that was the good news. We've certainly had some bad news on these fronts in recent times, but that was a very sweet win.
Well, absolutely. Now, Mike, I'm going to ask you to treat me like an absolute idiot for a moment, and which, you know, maybe you'll enjoy. But tell me why it is important that we have public financing for any election, and especially judicial?
Well, for any election, I think it's important that the public realize that we'll always pay for elections one way or another. You know, right now we've got donor-owned elections. And you know, one of the things the Democracy Campaign does is we track the money in state politics. We have the state's only searchable database of contributors to state campaigns. If you total up all the donors in that database, they amount to 1% of the state's population. So we've got a system where 1% of the people are bankrolling the campaigns. And I got to tell you, they're not doing this out of the goodness of their hearts. They're not doing this just to be good citizens. They're really making an investment in government, and they expect a return on their investment, and they're getting it. If you total up all the tax breaks, the pork barrel spending projects, the contracts that they get for state work, those special interest donors are getting $100 back for every dollar that they donate on average. And, you know, the bottom line is that we've done studies that put a price tag on all the benefits these special interest donors get from state government, and it totals up to more than $1,300 per taxpayer per year in Wisconsin. So we're paying through the nose for the way we finance campaigns right now, which is, you know, the top 1% does all the giving, and they also get a heck of a lot from state government in return. Well, instead of having donor-owned elections, we could have voter-owned elections where we all have, you know, we all pay a small price. We all have a small stake in financing the elections, which would allow the politicians to not be so hopelessly beholden to those wealthy special interests, but actually look out for us for a change. And, you know, the irony is that you could do publicly financed elections in Wisconsin for all state offices for somewhere between $3 and $4 per year per taxpayer. So, you know, the public needs to understand that we're paying for elections one way or another. We can either pay for them directly and have and put politicians in a position of answering to us, or we can do it the way we do it now and have our politicians effectively owned by this narrow group of people who in the big corporations that want something in return for government, and they're getting it.
That's really amazing, Mike. And you know, in some ways it makes you wonder, being, you know, that's the case, it almost makes you wonder if they're more scared of answering to us versus the current corporate masters they have. But That being neither here nor there, one of the things that I wanted to make sure that I got through from what you're saying that the price of a decent specialty coffee from Starbucks or Caribou per year per citizen of Wisconsin is what it would take to finance elections publicly.
If all the taxpayers were willing to have that small stake in our democracy and everybody would chip in, somewhere between $3 and $4 per taxpayer per year would get us a good solid system of public financing for all elections. So the cost is not great. And when you put it that way, when you talk about, you know, basically getting a specialty coffee in the morning, it's a tiny expense for voter-owned elections. The way we're doing it now, yeah, we don't have to pay that $3 or $4, but we're paying a heck of a lot more for all the benefits, all the rewards that are being handed back to these big donors who are doing the bankrolling of the campaigns. So, you know, I think it's foolhardy to say, well, you know, I've heard a lot of people say, well, I don't want to pay for election campaigns. I don't think the public should have to pay for them. Well, the public is always going to pay one way or the other, and right now we're paying for the servicing of these big donors, and we're paying a premium for it.
Absolutely. Now, Mike, one of the things that really strikes me, too, is that the attitude that you mentioned that a lot of people have of, I don't want to finance elections. Well, a lot of that seems to be, again, where they don't think about it, where they don't realize that, again, when corporations and companies and such are allowed to directly or even indirectly, but very obviously that they're behind it, pour money into campaigns, then, as you said, the people elected that way feel obligated and sometimes are directly basically put to the task by the people who donated to give benefits back. And as you said, it was $100 to $1 spent. That's a hell of an investment, honestly, when you think about it.
But you can't do that in the best bull market on Wall Street.
Yeah, but so the thing is that the general public, this is part of actually a disconnect I've noticed when I've been talking to people in Wisconsin, across the country, and it's, I think, an unfortunate side effect of a very right-wing thing of trying to separate government from people in people's minds, where the government is them and the people is us. And what, of course, you and I know by looking at it is, no, the government, the people, they're both the same thing. And that's why eventually we're going to pay one way or the other. If these people are able, if these corporations are able to make these donations and get these favors, those favors come out of taxpayer money, which, hey, we put into the system.
People, you know, understandably bellyache about paying high taxes, but I think there's a lack of appreciation for the fact that when there's a Las Vegas loophole that allows a corporation to avoid all taxation if it on paper is headquartered in Nevada, you know, when there are all these tax breaks and you've got major corporations in Wisconsin that pay not one single dime in tax, well, that has to be made up by all of the rest of us paying more. But I tell you, you know, in particular, we can't afford to have judges who are raising money from wealthy donors and from corporations and from big interest groups that may end up winding up in front of them in court. That, you know, it's bad enough that we've got legislators and governors who have that financial conflict of interest as they're making public policy. But now we've got judges who are supposed to be, above politics. They're supposed to base their rulings just on the Constitution and the law and the facts involved in a case. They're not supposed to be beholden to any special interest, and yet we've had Supreme Court races that are costing $6 million now, and these candidates, you know, Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, put $4 million into the 2007 and 2008 Supreme Court races combined. Well, when WMC appears before the court on a case that is of interest to them, you know, those justices that got elected now have a huge conflict of interest, and we can't have that. And that's why we push so hard for the Impartial Justice Act.
Well, absolutely. Now, before I move on to another related topic, though, I wanted to point out, too, that something that a lot of people might not realize about justices, be they Supreme Court or Circuit Court or whatever, the grand majority of lawsuits and business before courts are business related. So when you have a major business lobbying firm like Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce dumping millions of dollars into Wisconsin Supreme Court races, you're talking about really influencing judges, not just on a small number of cases, but on a grand majority of the kind of cases they're going to be seeing.
Right. And how would the average person feel if they've got a, you know, if they've got a gripe, if they've got a grievance against a particular company, and their case goes to court? How are they going to feel if they know that the judge got elected with the financial support of that business and that business's trade association, and, you know, that those interests were responsible for putting the judge on the bench? You know, is that citizen going to feel like they're going to get a fair shake? Well, that's exactly the situation we've got right now, and that's exactly what we're trying to fix now with the enactment of the Impartial Justice Act.
Absolutely, and you know, it's not as if we have the warning of having the justices' robes embroidered with all their sponsor logos the way Indy cars are.
Right.
So you know, you walk into the courtroom and you don't see that corporate logo that you're actually trying to fight against. But
it's not a bad idea, truth in advertising.
Well, that's what I'm saying. At least you'd have that. But you know, we did better. You did better, frankly, Mr. Moses, by helping get this Impartial Justice Act put through. Now, one of the things I'm concerned about, though, I mean, that happened. Doyle signed that in early December, right?
Yep.
Okay, and then here comes late January, the nationally, now at this point, notorious judgment from the Supreme Court of the United States regarding the Citizens United case. And does there, just a really quick recap from my point of view, basically, as far as I understand it, and please correct me if I'm missing something here, Mike, but as I understand it, that decision allows corporations to essentially indirectly dump as much money as they want into a political contest by being able to produce independent media pieces, quote-unquote independent, media pieces, either for or against whatever candidate they want all the way up to election day. Is that right?
That sums it up really well, Aldous. It's incredibly ironic that at a time where corporate power and political influence has reached levels not seen since the Gilded Age, since the day of the robber barons, and at a time when recklessness and irresponsibility in the banking industry and on Wall Street has brought our economy to its knees, the Supreme Court ruled that corporations don't have enough influence over our lives or our democracy and need to be allowed to spend even more freely on elections. You know, they came to that conclusion at a time when the wounds that have been inflicted on tens of millions of Americans are still fresh. That is what astonishes me so much about that ruling. And, you know, to come to that conclusion, you know, they based it and really expanded dramatically two doctrines. One is the doctrine that money is speech, and the other is the doctrine that corporations are people. Now, the doctrine that corporations are people doesn't come from the U.S. Constitution. The word corporation doesn't appear anywhere in the Bill of Rights or in the First Amendment or in the Constitution itself. So it was an act of extraordinary judicial activism. It was legislating from the bench for the court to reach this conclusion that corporations are people and they have rights as citizens. And in this case, they really are sort of super citizens that that shouldn't be subject to the same kinds of limits on political activity that all the rest of us are subject to. They should be able to spend unlimited sums to influence elections. That is an astonishing, astonishing ruling. And I think it actually makes public financing all the more important because we are reaching a point where you might as well put the politicians in NASCAR uniforms and with the sponsor patches on them.
Well, you know,
we've got to have a clean money alternative for candidates to at least allow them to be independent to some degree of that money. But what this really does, I think, is highlight the need for much more robust disclosure so that these corporations can't just funnel their money to trade associations like WMC or the U.S. Chamber of Commerce or phony front groups like All Children Matter or the Coalition for America's Families. And those are real groups. I'm not making those names up.
Oh, yeah.
And make them stand by their ads and make them be accountable for their political activity. And then there's also a bill that is moving in the state Senate. It just got a committee hearing in the Senate. It's going to get a vote in committee next week that would require shareholders to consent to have their money used for political spending. So I think there are a lot of needed countermeasures because of this disastrous ruling. This was an assault on our democracy, pure and simple.
Well, you know, I mean, the way that particular ruling, the Citizens United ruling, went, I looked at that and I started worrying. I'm like, will this have an impact on... Because, you know, how federal law supersedes state law, supersedes local law. I was worried that ruling may have an effect on some of the things like the Impartial Justice Act that we managed to get put through.
Well, it doesn't nullify the Impartial Justice Act because the ruling didn't deal with the issue of public financing. Public financing remains on sound constitutional footing.
Good.
Now, there have been two federal lawsuits filed challenging the Impartial Justice Act. So that law will be assaulted as well and will have to be defended in court. But the Citizens United ruling didn't take on public financing, and also the justices upheld disclosure. So the one thing that the ruling did do, and it's a disastrous effect, and it makes it more difficult for the Impartial Justice Act to be effective, is it allows unlimited corporate spending. And now the Impartial Justice Act does contain a provision that gives candidates supplemental public funds to respond to attacks by outside groups, including corporate-funded groups. So it's going to be important to have the kind of disclosure that's necessary to be able to then trigger those rescue funds for candidates who are attacked by these outside groups. There's no question that before January 21st, when the court ruled in the Citizens United case, I was feeling much, much better about the Impartial Justice Act. While the court ruling didn't nullify or invalidate that act in any way, it did have a devastatingly negative impact on our democracy and I think creates the need for a very forceful set of countermeasures from legislators at both the state and federal level, because the great damage was done, and now I think we're going to be fighting for a long time to try to undo that damage.
Right, but as you put in a very compassionately worded post on WISDC.org, that basically you felt that while this is disastrous and needs to be fought, it's by no means a game over for democracy.
Oh, and you know, that was something that I heard a lot of right after the ruling, is that the reaction I think was basically game over. You know, it means that no campaign finance reforms remain in place, that basically it's curtains for democracy. And I think it was important for people to understand the extent of the damage that was done, but it was also important for people to understand what the court did not do. The court did not invalidate public financing. Public financing remains an option and should be expanded to all offices. And Congress should get off the snide and pass the Fair Elections Now Act and create publicly financed congressional races as well. Public financing remains alive and remains a very viable alternative. Disclosure is constitutional. 8 of the 9 justices upheld disclosure. So Congress and state legislatures should go much farther in creating real transparency and meaningful disclosure of the spending to make sure that these groups stand by their ads and, you know, that the proverbial curtain is pulled back to show the wizard back there pulling the levers and let people see who's really in charge of Oz.
Absolutely.
And, you know, both the majority opinion and dissenting opinions pointed out that, hey, shareholder consent is perhaps needed. If corporations are going to spend all this money, then the people who invest in those corporations ought to have a say. And we don't have that currently, but we ought to.
Yeah, one of the things that I try to point out to people, because I've also noted that essentially when this ruling came down, it definitely created corporations as these essentially, especially in the way of our democracy is concerned, these superhuman beings. And I've had people push back at me and go, well, what do you mean superhuman? What are you talking about? I'm like, okay, let me put it to you this way. Bill Gates is worth, you know, X number of billions of dollars. Microsoft is worth way more than Bill Gates. And Microsoft is the corporation. It is, even by and large, worth a hell of a lot more than Bill Gates Jr. But it does have some inherent weaknesses, such as you were saying, consent of shareholders. If you or I, let's say we had deep pockets and we wanted to put as much money out there as we could personally, well, you know, we had some limited funds compared to any corporation, but, you know, we could do that and we would only have to ask ourselves, do I want to support this candidate? Now, in the case of a corporation, if you require the shareholders of a corporation to come to a consensus or whatever the law is going to say, that basically all the shareholders have to say yes, or at least the majority or however it's going to be, well, then that actually, first of all, delays things, because anytime you want to spend political money, at least a majority, if not all, of your shareholders have to say, yes, we can do that. And then B, they actually have to agree. And so in that way, it's taking that impersonal aspect of corporations and using it against them.
Yep. I think it's important for people to realize that right now, what this ruling has done is it's really tipped the scales of corporate governance in a way that's very detrimental to the people who've invested in the corporation. This political money can be spent by top corporate managers without the consent or even knowledge of the people who supply all the capital, the investors. That's got to change. We need corporate democracy so that the investors have a say, that they both have knowledge of the political spending and then ultimately give their consent.
Well, yeah, I mean, Mike, how many people who are really very liberal or at the very least moderate at heart drink Coca-Cola every day and have no idea that all that money is going to an organization that when it's had the ability to spend politically tends to spend highly conservatively and vice versa. And they don't think about that because it's not disclosed. It's not transparent. And so they don't realize that when they're spending the $1 to $1.25 on the can of Coke out of that vending machine, that money, at least part of it, is indirectly going against their political will.
Right. Exactly.
Now, speaking of political will and money from companies, we do have one other thing recently that comes to mind that shows why what the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign does is important and why having open and fair governance is just so vital. And that's the payday lender legislation. Bring us up to speed on that, if you would.
Well, you know, Wisconsin used to have usury laws that were in place until 1996. So for years and years, there was a limit on what financial institutions could charge for loans, and the limit was 18%. In 1996, that 18% limit was repealed. We today have basically legalized loan sharking. We've got institutions that are routinely charging over 500% interest. Sometimes they approach or even exceed 1,000% interest on cash advances and payday loans. It's legalized loan sharking, and there's absolutely no limit. Well, there was legislation introduced to create a 36% limit, double what the old limit was. And keep in mind, Wisconsin for years and years had a very healthy financial sector with an interest rate limit of 18%. Legislation was offered to create a 36% limit on these payday loans. And the Speaker of the Assembly, Mike Sheridan, had been a sponsor of the legislation. Last September, he had a change of heart and announced that the 36% rate limit went too far and he couldn't support it. Well, we did some digging into the campaign contributions, and what we found was that the day before he made that announcement, a committee that he controls got a huge campaign contribution from payday lenders. And the four committees that control that are controlled by legislative leaders that raise money, are raising tens of thousands of dollars in campaign contributions. The interesting thing is more than half of the money that Sheridan's committee raised came either the day before or 3 weeks after he made that announcement.
Uh-huh.
And the timing just jumped off the pages at us. For all this payday lender money to flow in right around the time that he had this change of heart, I think just spoke volumes about how the payday lenders were able to use campaign cash to derail tough legislation, and they've also poured in over $500,000 in spending and lobbying. In a week or two, we're going to be able to analyze the campaign contributions for all 132 legislators. I think we'll find hundreds of thousands of dollars in campaign contributions from the payday lenders, And what they've effectively been able to do ever since the rate limit was eliminated is they've been able to play defense and stonewall and block legislation that would subject them to regulation. Wisconsin stands alone in the country. We are the only state in the nation that does not put any limit or any regulation whatsoever on these so-called payday loan operations. And we permit legalized loan sharking in this state, and the industry has been remarkably successful in blocking things. And if you look at where things stand as of today, I'd have to say the industry's winning again this session.
Well, Mike, and the thing to keep in mind too, I mean, we are not the only state in the union to have payday loan outfits. In fact, I think they're in almost every state, at least where they have been outlawed, and that means that having limitations on payday loan operations don't stop them. We won't be killing them. It's not like we're trying to completely kill the private financing industry, how we're going to put it, but we just want to make sure that they're not killing us. So
exactly. You know, and as far as I'm concerned, if the only way you can do business is to gouge people and, you know, savage them financially in the way that these loan sharks are doing, then you ought to go out of business. But, you know, obviously we had very healthy financial institutions back when we had an 18% interest rate limit, and 36% certainly seems, it's twice as generous as that old limit. And, you know, if these institutions can't function within that kind of a limit, I'm not sure that they ought to exist, because what they're doing right now is really it's just shameful, and it is loan sharking, and it's shameful that Wisconsin permits such activity. And you're right, these institutions do exist outside Wisconsin's borders. Every other state subjects them to some kind of restriction or some kind of regulation, and yet they exist. So to say that Wisconsin can't have a strong bill is preposterous. But the industry, I think, has played this game, both lobbying and campaign contributions, very, very skillfully, and they have a legislature that is listening to them and those special interests are trumping the public interest.
Well, Mike, keep on fighting that, and we'll keep on supporting you. Now, again, anybody who wants to know more about Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, they should go to your website, right, Mike? That's wisdc.org?
Yeah, exactly. And there's that searchable database of campaign contributors. There's blogs and all kinds of other features on there. So, there's also contact information to get in touch with us personally. And you know, and I really encourage people to get in touch and to check out the information there that's there and then use it and spread the word about it.
Yeah, well, I second that. All right. Well, thank you, Mike, for joining us today. And again, keep on fighting. We'll be there for you.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
You're welcome. Well, that's Interview Points for this week. If you'd like more information about Interview Points, please look up TMI.com. Thanks for joining me. This is Aldous Tyler saying farewell.